This week we will be concluding our discussion on the introduction of Proverbs by considering chapters 8 and 9. Note that in our discussion, we have skipped over chapter 6, verses 1 through 19. I'm going to break those down and give them due consideration at another time when we study the wise topics associated with them. So while we have not covered every passage in the introduction, we will wrap up the introduction today regardless and come back to a few other points later. Today's passage finishes some familiar themes that we have seen so far in Proverbs. There is the personification of Lady Wisdom juxtaposed against the personification of Lady Folly, and there are promises of blessings for those who would follow wisdom and threats of curses for those who would follow foolishness. Your passage, then, is chapters 8 and 9 of Proverbs, and if you have not read them yet, I recommend that you pause and do so now. Before we begin today's passage, I think that we should note the contrast between Lady Wisdom and the strange woman, that is, the adulteress, whom we find in chapters 5 through 7. In previous weeks, starting out in chapter 1, we've talked on and off about Lady Wisdom, Solomon's personification of wisdom. She is said in chapter 1 to cry out in the streets to the simple-minded, offering them blessings if they will follow her, and mockery when they fall into ruin for failing to do so. This week, the introduction to Proverbs will wrap up with a comparison between this woman and Lady Folly, the personification of foolishness, who tempts men to come after her that they may go straight down to death. Since we're looking at that comparison today, we can't fail to recognize the similarities of these two women to two other prominent women in the book of Proverbs, the adulteress and the wife of noble character. It seems fairly obvious to me that the adulteress from chapter 7 is to be directly contrasted against Lady Wisdom in chapter 8. The proximity of the two demonstrates the intended contrast, and adultery clearly aligns with foolishness. As we have discussed, adultery is perhaps the most foolish thing that a person, man or woman, can engage in. We also find similar descriptions of the adulteress in chapters 5 through 7 and of Lady Folly in chapter 9. Both are depicted as roaming about town, calling for the foolish, seducing them, and dragging them down to death. And so we see clearly that the adulteress is a symbol to us of foolishness itself. And if here in the opening chapters we have a lengthy description of the adulteress as Lady Folly, then surely we find a contrast to her in the end of the book, where Proverbs 31 describes for us the wife of noble character. The contrast is obvious. The adulteress is very much the opposite of a woman of noble character, and the wife described in Proverbs 31 embodies many of the traits of wisdom. Both the good wife and wisdom are said to be worth more than precious jewels. Both are diligent workers. They care for the needy. They support their families, and so forth. Surely that kind of comparison and contrast is no accident. So when you see a good woman, remember that she represents wisdom. When you see a bad one, remember that she represents foolishness. Having noted the obvious comparison between this chapter and the previous, let us now consider the contents of today's passages and what they say about the lady's wisdom and folly. First, in chapter 8, we will have a longer message from Lady Wisdom, and then in chapter 9, we will have a short closing argument from these two competing ladies, separated, of course, by the brief discussion about correcting a wise man and a scoffer, which we are skipping over today. Chapter 8 opens by asking us rhetorically, "Does not wisdom call?" Indeed, she does. She is on the heights, at the crossroads, and at the gates, everywhere that people can see her and hear her, freely available to anyone who would study and pray and seek her out. And wherever she is found, wisdom is crying out to foolish men that they should learn. If these men would only listen to her, wisdom will tell them the truth and righteousness without anything crooked or wicked or abominable. The straight path on which wisdom will put us is a path that leads to treasures greater than silver and gold and jewels. She is better than every desirable thing, as indeed we have discussed before. Wisdom is the key to obtaining desirable things. Lady Wisdom offers us prudence, knowledge, discretion, counsel, insight, strength, and wisdom. Listen to her, and you have the opportunity to make the right choices that you may have the best life. I note an interesting point in verse 13. It reads from the ESV, quote, "The fear of the Lord is hatred of evil, pride and arrogance and the way of evil and perverted speech I hate," end quote. I find that interesting because we had read in chapter 1, verse 7, that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. So the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, and the fear of the Lord is also hatred of evil. Ergo, those who love evil do not fear the Lord and do not have knowledge. And also, hating evil is the first step in having knowledge. All of these things go hand in hand. In hating evil, Lady Wisdom says that she hates pride and arrogance. The proud and arrogant person is the one who will not listen to wisdom. He thinks so highly of himself that despite knowing very little, when knowledge is set before him, he is unwilling to change. She also says that she hates a man with perverted speech, that is, a person who speaks foolishly, especially by lying. These things are on the path of evil, and Lady Wisdom hates them. Lady Wisdom demands truth, and accepting the truth takes a measure of humility. Moving on, we continue to read about the greatness of wisdom. Wisdom is the key by which kings and princes and nobles reign justly, and yet for all this import, wisdom can be found by anyone who seeks her. She loves those who love her. She will reward them with riches and honor, inheritance and treasures. If you must choose between riches and wisdom, choose wisdom. Wisdom will get you riches and more. Riches will not get you wisdom. In chapter 8, verses 22 through 31, Wisdom tells of how she was instrumental in God's creative works. Now, we can't take Lady Wisdom too literally here. She is a metaphor, after all, not an actual person. There was not some goddess named Wisdom working beside God when he created the universe. However, wisdom is of an eternal nature, as God is of an eternal nature, because wisdom is an attribute of the unchanging and eternal God. God is the source of all truth. He has always known the best goals and the best means to achieve those goals. In recognition of this, Lady Wisdom says that God fathered her in the beginning of his work and that she existed before the beginning of the earth. And we can be certain that wisdom was an inherent part of the process of designing the universe. Wisdom came forth before the oceans and before the springs of water. She was born before the mountains and the hills. She is older than dirt, older than the fields. When God set the sky, she was there. When he drew the circle of the earth and planted its foundations, she was there. When he plumbed the ocean depths and set the sea's boundaries, she was there. God used wisdom to make the world, and he used wisdom to fill the world with inhabitants, including man. Wisdom is higher than we are. We should listen to her. And so that is wisdom's exhortation. Listen to her. Do not neglect her instructions. Receive her blessing. That ends chapter 8. And from there, we move on to the final conclusion, contrasting wisdom and folly in chapter 9. Lady Wisdom has a beautiful house built on 7 pillars hewn of stone. 7, of course, is the number of God, as in on the 7th day he rested, and stone is a strong and sturdy building material. And Lady Wisdom has prepared a feast of slaughtered animals and fine wine. She has sent out young women, her servants, to call out from the highest places of the town where everyone can hear, "Let the simple come in here and feast on wisdom." The opportunity to leave a life of foolishness and join the company of the wise is readily available. Those who do so will live. In contrast, Lady Folly also has a house. Unlike Lady Wisdom, Lady Folly knows nothing, but she also cries out with a loud message which she spreads around town. Her message is, "Come in here, drink the water that I have stolen, and eat bread in secret." The bread, of course, must be eaten in secret because, like most foolish acts, it would be a public disgrace to be seen doing it. In contrast to Lady Wisdom, the feast with Lady Folly does not lead to life, but to death. All the guests around Lady Folly's table are dead, and her table around which they sit is the grave. So the option is before us. We can choose wisdom or foolishness. Wisdom leads to life and prosperity, while foolishness leads to misery and death. I am reminded of the words of Moses when he concluded his laws in Deuteronomy 30:19. "I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore choose life that you and your offspring may live." Now, sitting right between those two closing arguments from these two competing women, we have in verses 7 through 12 the fundamental key in determining which side of this a man lands on: his ability to humbly accept correction. Verse 8 tells us the crux of the matter. If you correct a wise man, he will love you. But if you correct a scoffer, he will hate you. The fear of Jehovah is the beginning of wisdom, and part of fearing Jehovah is having a healthy recognition that he is perfect and you are not. You as a human being have faults, and if you want to succeed in life, then you have to have the humility to recognize that you have faults and to better yourself so that your faults do not drag you down. You need to be able to compare yourself against the divine standard and see your own lack, and you need to be able to humbly listen to others who can see your lack when you can't. This is one of the fundamental differences between a wise man and a scoffer. The scoffer, translating the Hebrew lutz, is a man who speaks a foreign language, and thus, by extension, he is one who babbles foolishly, especially by mocking others. If you correct this scoffer, he is not going to listen to you. In fact, he is more likely to abuse you and injure you for having corrected him. The wicked man is not looking to better himself. Either he already thinks he is perfect, or he doesn't care that he isn't. And if you try to tell him how to do better, he's just going to be mad at you for telling him. That is how we define a scoffer. The wise man, in contrast, when he is told of how he can do better, is glad to hear it. He wants to do better. If you tell him how to do better, he will thank you for telling him. Both the wise man and the scoffer have their faults. Both of them live in a fallen world full of dangers. Both of them are walking down a dimly lit path and are on their way to falling into the pit. If you tell the wise man there's a pit, he will say, "Oh, thank you, I almost fell in the pit." He will live. If you tell the scoffer that he's about to walk into the pit, he says, "Shove off, I'll go where I want," and then he walks into the pit, and maybe he'll drag you down with him. Jesus referred to a similar phenomenon in Matthew 7:6 when he said, "Do not give dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you. Give wisdom to a fool, and he'll attack you in response." However, given the context, I don't think that the intent here is for us to put ourselves into the shoes of the advisor. I think that we should put ourselves into the shoes of the man who needs the advice. When someone tells you, "This is how you do it better," which man will you be? Will you scoff and say, "No, no, no, I know how to do it right. I'm not going to listen to you. I don't need advice," and then run off the cliff? Or will you humbly listen and try to understand? Will you resent the person for giving you advice, or will you be glad that he is trying to help? Because that is the choice in front of you. Do you want to be a wise man and listen to this book of Proverbs, or do you want to be a fool? Well, I hope that you want to be wise, and I hope that you will listen, and I hope that this book will edify you. In life application of this passage, I find a pretty straightforward message. Wisdom is available and foolishness is available. It has been this way and it will always be this way, and tragically, people will continue to choose foolishness. I must say, in studying the Proverbs in preparation for my messages on them, I find that I am not a wise man. At least, I am not perfectly wise. I take at least a little, perhaps undeserved comfort in that I have at many times in many years tried to follow this book, and in that I have done it better, I think, than many. Maybe at some point in the future I will attain to fully realizing this work, but I doubt it, because humans are born sinners and we will all fail, and that is very frustrating. It is frustrating for me on a personal level because I would prefer to do better, and I'm sure that it is frustrating for people around me as well. However, being on the side of the balance, which is more often than not attempting to implement wisdom than the rest of society, is perhaps even more frustrating. It is very obvious to me that we live among people in our era who are totally disinterested in wisdom in large numbers. Right now, humans are experiencing the highest levels of literacy in human history, and the Bible has been distributed worldwide. It has been translated into many different languages, such that now, according to the Wycliffe Global Alliance, at least 70% of all of the people in the world, and as much as 80%, have the entire Bible translated into a language they can understand. And 97% of everyone in the world has at least some portion of the Bible translated into a language that they can speak. Online access to the scriptures has made the good book more available than ever. Now, there are barriers still to access, to be sure. Repressive atheist or Muslim governments, which often don't want people under their control to have access to the scriptures, would be one example. However, in the Western world, virtually everyone has ready access to the Bible on his cell phone in a language that he can understand and that he can read. According to the Baptist Press, 87% of American households contain at least one Bible. Wisdom has never cried louder than it cries today in our own society. According to Barna, most Americans still say that they believe the Bible is the Word of God, and yet, despite this ready availability of wisdom and a seeming acknowledgement that it is wisdom, only a third of Americans study the Bible on a weekly basis, and about as many as that, 29%, never read the Bible at all. 52% of Americans read something from the Bible only three or four times a year. Only 11% of Americans have read the Bible cover to cover. In my mind, reading the text cover to cover is critically important for understanding it at all, because it is so easy to cherry-pick verses and passages and take them out of their contexts. Many people, I believe, have a very distorted picture of the Bible because they hear certain passages preached emphatically over and over again, and they read certain passages that their Bible studies direct them to read, but they never get context from the whole of Scripture. But only 11% of people have read through the Bible in its entirety, and fewer than that, about 9%, have read through the Bible multiple times. I think we're pretty safe to say that that small 9% is the number of people who are seriously studying the Bible and attempting to apply it to their lives. Of course, as we have discussed in previous weeks, that kind of serious study and prayer and practice is what it will take to attain wisdom. If we were going to use these numbers on Bible readership as a definition of who is and is not wise, which is a rough comparison, to be sure, then we would draw the conclusion that a third of everyone are dangerously foolish and fewer than a tenth are very wise, and others range on a spectrum in between. Roughly half of people would fall into the little or no wisdom camp. Statistics like that are endlessly frustrating for a person like myself who devotes considerable energy to trying to get people to listen to the Scriptures. I am no Lady Wisdom, but I certainly know the frustration of crying out in the streets for people to listen to obvious truth only to have them scoff and give wounds in response. So the plight of Lady Wisdom, if we could call it that, resonates with me. This is particularly true because the Proverbs do tell us not to associate with foolish people because they are dangerous, and it is true. There is a large percentage of the population that, unfortunately, we must avoid because of the harm that they cause. I would guess that our statistic about 9% of people who have read the Bible in its entirety multiple times trends toward the older generation. Obviously, the longer one lives, the more time one has to actually read the good book. And the older generation tends to be more religiously devout than the younger ones. But I will say this, among people around my age, I have known about as many who have died of drug overdoses as I have known people who have read the Bible cover to cover. It can be very discouraging and very frustrating to cry out to people that they should come and get wisdom only to have them choose instead to run off with foolishness and literally die. To conclude then, the picture in life mirrors what the Scriptures paint. Wisdom and folly both cry out. Both are available for the taking. Wisdom is readily available, but fools will reject it, despite it giving wisdom to kings to make good decisions, and despite it being a tool which God used to build the earth itself. There is life in wisdom, and there is death in foolishness. This book is crying out wisdom, and so I beg you to accept wisdom and live.
For those of you who are listening to this message away from your computer and are looking for more like it, you can find us at eastjordan.church.